And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every single episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, a droid is torn between a Twi'lek pilot and her first mate. A mysterious artist tags an Imperial shipyard. A living Lathot scuffles with a group of stormtroopers. And an orphan boy faces off against an Imperial pilot. We're talking about the four Rebels prequel shorts this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good. Is, like, what other kind of, is a dead Lathot gonna scuffle with a group of stormtroopers?
Well, the thing is that Zep thought he was the last of his people.
Right, right.
So, like, he's, like, living. I don't know. I was... Don't, shut up! I was sick all weekend.
First off, I want to say Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody! And happy 150 episodes of J-Guys.
Yeah, how about that? Like, and it all falls on the true start of Star Wars Rebels, where we're actually digging into the animated show, even if it's just the lead up cartoons.
Yeah, and we didn't plan for that too, it just kind of happened.
Yeah, I like that.
Now, you had said, did you mention to me, have you seen these prequels before?
I remember watching them before the show started, but they're so short, you know, and that, like, I'd completely forgotten all of them. Except, you know, I mean, I got the, I remember the general idea of them. Is like, actually, once I saw the titles of them, I'm like, okay, I remember that. Because they're all, like, they're very simple, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, once, you know, once you started watching, and spoiler, Hope and I have watched Rebels through as it aired. So once you start watching the show, like, those are just, like, they're very normal character moments of the show. So I didn't really remember them until I started watching them again. Then I was like, oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because, like, if you're, okay, I guess we should say this, because I've had a couple people tell me on Twitter, they're like, oh, like, we want to listen to your show, but you're so far into Clone Wars that we'll just pick up with you on Rebels. So if this is the first time that you're listening to us, first and foremost, hi, I'm Hope. This is Chris. We podcast and stuff. I'm usually far more animated, but I've been very sick all weekend, so this is the extent of my brain. Hi. We are approaching Rebels as people who have actually seen Rebels. So if you didn't listen to any of our Clone Wars episodes, we were approaching Clone Wars, except for the last two seasons for Chris, as people had seen all of Clone Wars. And so as we're watching this, if you're watching Rebels along with us and you've never seen Rebels, just know that, like, we're making points of, like, oh, this connects to a future season when this happens, and there's probably going to be spoilers. So, like, that's how we're approaching this as people who have already seen Rebels, analyzing Rebels from the start. Not doing it every week, wondering, like, oh, what's going to happen next week, because we already know. So just that's your heads up. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi. Our podcast is named after Rex.
You're still fairly animated, so, like, yeah. So this is actually good. If they're new, you can sort of ramp them up into full Hope animation, you know?
Yeah. Normally I have so much more energy, but I really have been sick all weekend, so we were going to do two podcasts tonight. I was like, Chris, I can't. I'm dying. So I can handle shorts. I can do shorts. That's cool. I can do that.
It's okay. Spoiler, I'm supposed to be writing a wedding ceremony tonight, so that will actually have happened by the time this airs. It'll be a couple days ago by the time this comes out.
Good luck. Well, did you have a good week?
I did have a fairly good week, yeah.
I'm actually going through right now what you went through I don't. I guess it was last year when you had the story on the show about how you stole a mattress.
Quote unquote stole.
I didn't steal a mattress, but I do have a new mattress, so it's like I'm
Isn't it
trying to get
nice?
used. Huh?
Isn't it nice to have a new mattress?
I'm getting used to it because I've had my mattress since. I know I've had it since high school. I might have had it since middle school.
Oh, so you had it like worn right into where it
There
was
is
like a comfy
definitely a
womb.
dip. And so I've had trouble sleeping ever since like I did this whole mattress switch thing. And like every time I lay on the new mattress, like something in my neck or my shoulders or my back pops, and I'm just like, is this what sleeping with support feels like?
It would, well, yeah, no, that's what your body getting straightened out probably feels like.
It's
Slowly.
not oversaturating. It's like every time I sit on my bed, something pops, and I'm just like, whoa.
I had a mattress that I had for like 4 or 5, 6 years, something like that, and it was so comfy. But like, you know, by the time I discarded it and took a real look at it, it was like, it was comfortable. It probably was not doing my back any favors. And then after that, I went to a futon, which was better for a while. But once that got going, yeah.
Well,
I'm
that's
still
where I was,
enjoying
because
that mattress.
I was just getting to the point, like, every morning I woke up, just my low back was hurting. And I am 31 now, and I'm pretty sure I've had that mattress since middle school. So it wasn't 4 or 5 years. It was like 15,
You don't want to
16 years.
You don't want to look at the scientific statements of how much dust is inside and
and
like
sweat and dander.
Well, dander and then like dead dander mites and.
Oh yeah.
There's many pounds. It's incredible. I was reading about like what gathers inside a mattress over the years, and it's incredible.
And
incredibly gross.
Yeah. No, I haven't been able to throw the mattress out, so I just kind of like leaned against my wall, and my cats are having a field day climbing
I
it.
saw that picture. Mattresses are, I was going to say, they're like catnip to cats, but they're, yeah, cats love mattresses because you can claw right up them and then like run across the top or sleep on the top. Cats
yeah,
love getting
my
that
cats are
high.
definitely having a field day with my mattress. So.
They're like Obi-Wan. They like the high ground.
I did see a great picture of two mannequins on stairs. On different levels of stairs, and one said, I have the high ground mannequin. All right, so we've been teasing it, and we talked about all the different, like, canon stuff, and I'm happy just to get into Rebels. You ready?
I am.
All right. So, here we go. The Machine and the Ghost, Art Attack, Entanglement, and Property of Ezra Bridger were four prequel shorts released weekly online and on Disney XD between August 11th through September 1st, 2014. Some extra information for you. The first season, set up 5 years before Star Wars A New Hope, follows the crew of the starship Ghost in the early days of the fight against the Empire. The four shorts introduced the crew of the Ghost, which is a modified VCX-100 light freighter owned by Twi'lek Harrison Dula that was used by the Spectre's rebel cell during the Age of the Empire. The Ghost also has an auxiliary vessel called the Phantom that could double both as a shuttle and a starfighter. Star Wars Rebels stars Taylor Gray as Ezra, Vanessa Marshall as Hera, Freddie Prinze Jr. as Kanan, Tia Sikar as Sabine, and Steve Bloom as Zeb. And can I say I've met Steve Bloom? He's super lovely. He is just so nice and sweet and funny, and I really enjoyed meeting him. He is just a sweetheart. Now, Chopper's voice actor remained a mystery for the entire series until it was revealed in the final episode that Chopper was voiced by producer Dave Filoni. In Art Attack, Steve Bloom, Dave Filoni, and Greg Wiseman voices the Stormtroopers. In Entanglement and Property of Ezra Bridger, Greg Ellis voices Valen Rudor, identified here as LS-607, a reoccurring fighter pilot in the early seasons. Greg Ellis's other credits include Turk Falso in Clone Wars, Hawaii 5-0, 2009 Star Trek, and Pirates of the Caribbean. In Art Attack, Sabine's attack on the shipyard is remembered by the stormtroopers guarding the TIE fighters in Fire Across the Galaxy later in the season. For Ezra shorts, For Ezra shorts, upon its release, various official sites had conflicting titles for the short. StarWars.com and the official Star Wars YouTube channel listed the short as Not What You Think, while Disney.com and Disney XD listed the short as Property of Ezra Bridger. The issue was later corrected, and the short was universally named Property of Ezra Bridger. I think in the one that I sent you and that I watched, it was still titled Not What You Think.
Yeah, and I was like a little confused over that, but I sort of figured that was happening, and definitely Property of Ezra Bridger is a much better title than Not What You Think. Not What You Think is just kind of like, huh, well, okay.
Yeah. And finally, Chopper's added appearance is directly inspired from concept artist Ralph McQuarrie's original Episode 4 design sketches for R2-D2. According to Filoni, Chopper's actions were meant to reflect his destructive and cantankerous nature. Filoni also stressed that he and the production team had carefully selected the names of the series characters in order to imbue them with a sense of purpose and meaning. And you know, I started thinking about that a little bit, because some of their names, like Ezra Bridger, Ezra very much is a bridge from, like, the old generation of Jedi to the new. He's constantly connecting with animals. He kind of is, like, of a bridge of a person. And I was trying to think of, that was the only one that I was like, yeah.
Well, Chopper sounds like a motorcycle, like a
and
biker's bike.
Yeah, and he's a little murder bot. But, like, yeah. I was trying to figure out all the other ones. I was like, Kanan Jarrus, no. Hera Syndulla, I don't see that one. Sabine Wren. Zeb, I was like, no, Ezra and Chopper are the two that have names that actually match who they are. So, if this is your first time listening, again, welcome to JGS and Jedi. So, throughout all of our run of Clone Wars...
Somebody else needs a sense of purpose and meaning.
Yes. So, throughout our entire run of Clone Wars, if you've ever seen Clone Wars, you know at the beginning of the episode, they have the little platitudes. Well, we started reading them in a dirty Yoda voice, adding in bed at the end of them.
No platitudes there are in Rebels.
No, there's not. And over time, as we did it, Yoda became very much our third podcaster, didn't you, Yoda?
Third leg.
And so we were so sad, and we were straining to, like, figure out, like, how to keep Yoda in our show because there's no platitudes in Rebels. And we came up with the idea of you guys sending Yoda your questions and advice from Yoda.
So, yes.
If you want to get advice from Yoda, you can do it two ways. You can either go to the Two True Freaks Facebook page and find the episode that you're listening to right now, and you can just leave a question for Yoda, or you can email me at hope@twotruefreaks, TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. That's so hard to think of when I'm sick. I was like, how do I spell words? And you can send a question to Yoda. So this week, for our very first one, you ready, Yoda?
Yes, Yoda is ready. Mm-hmm.
You have two questions. The first one. Who is the hottest female Jedi in the saga?
Not in the movies, was she? No. Many Jedis nobody saw. Yoda's favorite lady Jedi? Juicy Lucy.
Mm-hmm. All right, tell me about Juicy Lucy. Tell me.
Oh, size matters not.
Was she human or alien?
Not human. No. 14 legs.
Wow.
Down to there.
Does she give Mama the Hutt a run for her money? Because I know how much you love Mama the Hutt.
No parasites that Yoda knows of. Spelled J-U-S Salucy. S-L-U-I-C-E. Juicy Lucy.
I almost just choked on chocolate.
Yoda still has one of her Jedi robes that Yoda sometimes still smells.
I was just about to ask, you still smell it?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes Yoda curls up in it.
Aww. Mm-hmm. Did she die in Order 66? I'm sorry, Yoda. But I guess she was Juicy Lucy in the dirt. Not a long silence at all.
Next question.
Alright. Same question, only who is the hottest male Jedi in the saga?
Easy. Easy. Not counting Yoda, of course.
No, you are by far the hottest, my friend.
Evan Peel. Majestic looking. One eye makes him look rough and tumble, too.
You know, I can see that because he's like waist height for a lady. I mean...
Just a... You know. No space homo, but Yoda says good-looking guy. Nice ears. Big ears, important.
Big ears are important. They give you more to grab.
Could use... more sun, maybe? Spray tan, maybe? Green makeup, maybe? Yoda's all just right. Quibbling.
All right, I'm going to give you a question, Yoda. What would you rather eat? A cannoli or bacon? And why?
Yoda knows a place where Yoda can get bacon cannoli.
Oh my god, really? That sounds amazing.
Yoda has eaten bacon cannoli. Better than cannoli, though? Space cannoli. Better than space cannoli? Space cannoli donut.
Well, what do you like about it? Is it the cream?
Yoda likes cream. Yes. Yes. Yoda likes crunchy shell, too.
Ew.
Crunchy. Hard to find good space Italian deli that makes good space cannoli. But Yoda knows a place.
I think that was a first good run. So if you want to get more advice from Yoda, whether it be life advice, love advice, money advice, like I said, you can leave a comment on this episode in the Two True Freaks on Facebook page.
Yoda
or
will
you
be
can
here
email
every
me
week.
At...
Yoda will be here every week.
Every week.
Waiting.
And if we don't get questions, Yoda, by darn it, I will make up questions on the fly.
Waiting and watching. Always watching.
Yeah, or you can, like I was saying, you can email me at hope@twotruefreaks.com. So, all right, you ready to get into your to Rebel stuff?
I am.
Me too. All right, so ready? I have it broken to acts, but I guess it's prequel one.
Yes. And I guess these were, if they were in order, either they were in order or we watched them in the same order because we've got them in our notes in the same order.
That was the order, yeah. That was the official order.
Oh, all right.
So.
All right.
Prequel 1, The Machine and the Ghost. We open with a bang as a group of TIE fighters is chasing after the ghost. Harris piloting and snooting at Kanan to get on some guns and shoot something. And Kanan is snooting back at her. They're just a bunch of lovely snoots, bickering like an old married couple.
I'm glad we ported snoot over to the new show.
We had to bring snooting over. Snooting's a very important word that I invented. Snoot. The ghost takes a hit and the shields go down. Hera tells their droid Chopper to fix them. As the fight continues, the internal comms go out on the ship. And Hera barks at Chopper to go fix the comms. And Chopper's like, I'm still fixing the shields. And Hera says that they need comms to coordinate an attack. Chopper rolls into the back where the guns are. And Kanan's like, dude, what the hell are you doing back here? Captain Hera is annoying me, so I don't need to hear her voice on the comms. But oh my god, I love her voice. Hera, I love her. Hera, talk to me! So I had to bring back some of our talk of a new dawn. Go fix the children, Chopper. And Chopper groans and rolls back to the front. And he tells Hera that Kanan wants her to fly better. And she laughs and rolls the ship hard and shoots down one of the ties for Kanan. And Chopper's starting to get annoyed with the back and forth. And he just rolls straight up to a gun himself. And with one flick of his tiny little arms, Chopper shoots down the last TIE fighter. As he rolls back to the front, he hears Kanan and Hera flirting with each other, so no more snooting, they're smooting. And Chopper rolls in, and they congratulate Chopper on getting the last TIE fighter. And they go right back to giving Chopper a list of things to do, and Chopper mouths off to them. The end. What'd you think of this one, Chris?
I liked it. It was basically a remake of the Ben's Death and TIE Fighter, like a funny version of the Ben's Death and TIE Fighter attack scene from episode 4. I mean, right with some of the iconic shots of it. Like a rolling shot over the top of the ship where everything looks like they're kind of moving slowly because they're all moving in proportion to each other. Plus the music is straight up. You know, all the cues from Ben's Death and TIE Fighter Attack. So that was kind of neat. I mean, these are so simple, but this just establishes the relationship between Kanan and Hera, and in a funny way, and them basically it's like a bickering couple communicating through their kid. You know, tell your mom that the peas are cold. You know, tell your dad that if you know he didn't come home late for work, maybe the peas wouldn't be cold. Except it's more good-natured bickering. You know, they're almost more like doing it to get a rise out of Chopper. But it just gives you a feel for the dynamic of the people on the ship. And it also tells you, you know, communicates that Hera is a really good pilot. You know, that she's the star pilot of the show. Mm. And that's about it. It's just very, very entertaining. 3 minutes.
I had a couple notes for this. When I was rewatching this for the first time, it kind of struck me how much, like, how, like, super extra sassy Hera was and how she was, like, mouthing off to, like, Kanan and Ezra. Or not Ezra, Chopper.
They sort of hyped it up a little, I think, for these episodes because it was in such a short, you know, it was more than and Chopper was a little more hyper, too, you know, in these.
To the point where, like, when I was first watching it, I was like, this almost seems a little out of character for Hera. But then I started kind of thinking about it, and I got used to watching Hera later in the show, where she is, like, space mom, and she's General Syndulla, and she's, like, a rebel leader. And so I started thinking about it, I was like, this is way early. Like, they're just one cell. They're not a part of the bigger alliance yet. So she is younger. She doesn't have the experience of being in the big rebel alliance and having all that responsibility. So she can have a chance to actually be a little bit more snippy and fun and sassy because this is just like a random
mission.
Yeah, life
is a lot simpler.
Like, yeah, this isn't them fighting in Scarif in Rogue One. It's just them outrunning some TIE fighters. So I actually kind of like going back and seeing her just like a little bit younger, not having as much of the experience that she has later. And it actually makes sense once I actually started really thinking about it.
Yeah, I agree.
I also had to laugh because like after reading A New Dawn, this is very much where Kanan and Hera were in A New Dawn, just kind of snipping at each other. So I really enjoyed that. One thing that I do like here is that in the short, they don't reveal that Kanan is a Jedi. They saved that for the premiere because they could have had a moment in this where it was like, oh, Kanan's a Jedi and he's fighting these TIE fighters. But no, they just portray him like some Joe Schmo, just some guy. And I like that they at least saved that he is a Jedi for the premiere instead of like dropping it here because I didn't really heavily, so listeners, you might need to fill me in on this one. I didn't follow Rebels heavily in the beginning. I actually didn't start watching Rebels until I found out that Ahsoka was in it. And then I was like, oh my God, my favorite character in Star Wars that I have a tattoo of. I'm like, I have to go and watch all of Rebels now. So I really just didn't pay attention to like any of the promotions and like the lead up to the show and stuff like that. So I don't know if they actually promoted that Kanan was a Jedi before the show came out or if it was revealed in the show in the first episode. So if they didn't push for it, I like that they hid that he was a Jedi here so it could be a surprise later. But like I said, I don't actually know.
Unless you read any of the books.
Yeah. And I didn't. I didn't read A New Dawn at that point, so. Mm-hmm. And my last note's kind of not really about this. It's actually about Resistance. Because, you know, Star Wars Resistance is running right now, and I've been watching it. And I try really, really hard not to compare Clone Wars to Rebels to Resistance, because they're all very different shows doing very different things. I always use the example that they're all fruit. One's a banana, one's an orange, one's an apple. They're very different kinds of fruit, but they're all still fruit in the same universe. But that said, I kind of have a pet peeve with Resistance, which is the character of Bucket. And my pet peeve came back while watching this, because right from the get-go, we know that Chopper is a main part of the team. We know his personality. We get who he is in 3 minutes. And I haven't got that in 11 episodes of Bucket, who is barely there and just kind of there. And I just kind of wish, like, seeing Chopper and compared to how they're presenting Bucket in Resistance, seeing Chopper in this made me go, man, I wish Bucket had a bigger role in Resistance.
Well, who knows further down the line.
Yeah, but it was just, like, just from the get-go. Like, it was like, here, first thing. Like, the very first short, the first thing we ever see of Rebels is about Chopper. And, like, yeah, Kanan Harris, too, but the title of the short is named after Chopper. And I just kind of wish we had that for Bucket.
Bucket. Every time I hear Bucket, I think of Michael Jackson's son, Blanket. And like every time I'm like, but I get the two confused, so I always like, oh, it's so funny that they named the robot after Michael Jackson's son, but Michael Jackson's son was not named Bucket.
Oh.
Although that would be more something like I would name a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your name's Bucket Honeywell. Bucket Plucket Honeywell.
You know, I found this out recently. Apparently in France, it very rarely happens, but they actually have a court system that they can override the name of a newborn baby and force the parents to change the name that they want to give their baby.
If it's too ridiculous?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And I was like, man, that would never fly in California.
I don't agree with that. It wouldn't fly anywhere, man. People are naming their kids whatever they want these days. It's amazing. I kind of, like, love it.
It wasn't like something ridiculous like naming their kid the, like, North Blue Northwest or whatever, like, they name their kid.
Oh, no, I'm famously, like, if I was a child-rearing type of guy and I had a boy, I would name him Godzilla.
Yeah.
Godzilla, so, Magilla Honeywell. So I think the France...
these parents wanted to, because, like, after France won the World Cup over the summer, they wanted to name their baby after two of the players that played in the World Cup. And it got vetoed, and they have to change their baby's name. And I was like, man, shit would never fly.
Why didn't they just not tell them that they were naming them after? I mean, the sports guys just probably have names, right? They probably should have just named those babies that name and left it at that.
It was like their two last names. So it was very, like, the two last names was like his first and middle name.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it was very distinct. Like, you knew it was them. So, but yeah, I just found that ridiculous. Anyway, that's all I have for the first prequel.
I know, these things are, they're 3 minute shorts, so.
I know. So, you ready for a prequel too?
I am ready.
All right. Art Attack. We open with a stormtrooper being a dick to a random civilian on Lothal. Little does the trooper know that he's being watched from the rooftops by our favorite artist Mandalorian, Sabine Wren. Sabine sneaks into a restricted area where there are ships and TIE fighters stored so she can make a diversion for the Ghost. Moving in between the TIE fighters, she picks one and starts to spray paint graffiti on it. It catches the attention of the two stormtroopers who spot her. Actually, I don't know how I missed this in the entire run of Rebels, but I did not know that the phoenix that she's constantly spray painting eventually becomes the Rebel Alliance symbol.
Yeah, it's like halfway there, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, how I never connected the two of that until, like, actually quite recently when somebody was like, oh, there's a poster in Resistance in Tora's room, and it's Sabine's Phoenix that becomes the Rebel Alliance. So when I was like, How did I never connect that?
That sounds more like me,
Rebels.
Hope.
What?
That sounds more like something I would do.
I know. I totally just glazed over that. Anyway, so she's spray painting ships with her Phoenix symbol. And it catches the attention of two stormtroopers who spot her. She sneaks away as they start to shoot, and they call in the intruder. She toys with all the stormtroopers in their captains, sneaking in and out of ships as they hunt her. And the stormtrooper commander arrives, and all of them split up to look for Sabine. She comes back to her graffiti and adds a few more brushstrokes. A trooper sneaks up on her, but she tricks him and runs off. When all the troopers come together, they see that she's left a thermal detonator on her painting. She hops the wall as it explodes, splattering paint on all the troopers and damaging their ships. Hera calls in that the diversion worked great, and Sabine admires the colors of her work before heading off into the night. The end. What'd you think of this one, Chris?
This is... It's not that I didn't like it. This is my least favorite of the four.
Yeah, this was actually my least favorite of the four, too. But
it has the least amount of, like, real content in it. Like, it's not maybe it's because it just has one character.
Yeah.
And, well, the stormtroopers are characters, but they're pretty much a character anyway. But, you know, it does establish the super Ralph McQuarrie look that Rebels is gonna feature. And, mm-hmm. That was really nice, and it had some nice, and this was very much like Ralph McQuarrie's paintings too, some nice deep saturated blue colors, you know, blue, deep blue sky and like blue highlights that were really, really, really nice. And then I was genuinely surprised because I was like, oh, they killed a stormtrooper, and then I was like, oh no, he was just knocked out.
Yeah.
Knocked down. I was like, oh, they're gonna kill people in the Disney cartoon, and it's like, oh, nope, not really. Although...
You know, I think the first person to actually kill a stormtrooper, and this is me saying this, haven't seen the first episode in a couple years, because we're doing the first episode of Rebels next week. I think the first person to openly kill a stormtrooper is Callus.
Oh, no, I've watched it, and here's something we'll get into this more in the first episode, but yeah, more stormtroopers are killed than I remembered. There's some more stormtrooper death. I think maybe it seemed like so much less because of Clone Wars. We got used to Clone Wars where it was like death, 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 death.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that's about all I got for this one.
For me, this is one of my least favorite, this from my least favorite of all of them, but that's not saying it's bad. It's just not the one that has the least amount of stuff in it for me. I only really have two notes about it. One is being how slinky Sabine is when she's sneaking around and just popping here and there. I don't think she's that slinky for the rest of the show.
She's almost Jedi-like in the way she gets around in this.
Yeah. But my other note is Sabine is such a great character. And she very much represents the one kind of person the kind of person that I don't think we get to see a lot in Star Wars, and that's artists. Because we get like fighters and pilots and Jedi and Sith and like Imperials and stuff like that, but we don't always get to see artists in Star Wars. And I would love to see more stories about like pop stars or actors and actresses and how they're like kind of bumping against the Empire with like creativity and free will and like wanting to like express themselves.
Well, we did make Cy Snoodles and
we did make Cy Snoodles, and she ended up being a femme fatale, and it was a great, amazing story. Because I find stories like that like fascinating, because like I was starting to kind of think about as I was coming to this about how Jean Anouilh wrote his version of Antigone during the 40s when France was under Nazi regime. Do you know the story?
Of Antigone?
Yeah, of Jean Anouilh's version of Antigone.
No.
So Jean Anouilh was a playwright in France under the Nazi regime. And he wrote this version of Antigone where he purposely made the character of... Oh, what's his name? Oh, it's been years since I read it. I think his name is Creon. Oh my god,
yes,
I have
yes.
read
C-R-E-
okay cool
yes
I have not read this version teacher, of Antigone in like 8 years.
My English teacher that we did that called him Crayon.
Yeah, so it's King Creon. And he purposely wrote Creon being sympathetic. So when Nazis watched this play, they'd be like, oh, the king, and he's a ruler, and he's great. But really, he wrote this version of this play for Antigone to represent the French Revolution that was happening, to inspire people. So he like wrote this version of a play to not only trick the Nazis watching it, but also to inspire the French Revolution watching it too.
And
I just think that's just like such a fascinating take on a story.
Also, during wars and stuff, during Nazi Germany during like World War II, there were a lot of like entertainers and famous people who were spies also, because they were in the halls of power and they were performing for famous people, for famous politicians and stuff. And a lot of them, took a sideline as spies. So there's a great precedent for that in Star Wars.
Josephine Baker was one. She was an American-born entertainer, and she went to France, and she was a well-known spy.
Wouldn't it be great if like Palpatine was like the biggest fan of like space Miley Cyrus or something? Some the most like teen pop star that he's just like, I'm just crazy for space Miley.
Yeah, I actually have like jotted, if you guys, this is your first time listening, I'm a fan fiction writer. I've actually pinned a little scene to happen like way, way later in my Thrawn fan fiction called Forces of Gravity on AO3, where Arunda Price is listening in on a message between Thrawn and his wife. And Thrawn is like, what are you listening to? And she's like, oh, it's the Lucky Leku. Like, I love them. And it's like a Twilight pop band.
I came in like a Death Star.
Yeah, and it's like a Twilight pop band that the Empire can't touch because they're so wildly popular. And it was just like a little thing I pinned in my fan fiction that I'm going to bring in the future. But like, I want to see stories like that where it's like these artists that are like bumping up against the Empire trying to like inspire people, but they can't do too much or they'll get killed. Like, I just... So, like, stories like with characters like Sabine, I just think are, like, really fascinating, because I would love to see more stories about artists in Star Wars and how they, like, fight against this regime in their own very creative way. Kind of like Senna in Hunger Games, where he, like, did, like, rebellious things with his dresses. Like, I love stories like that. That's so cool to me. Well, and I want to see more of that in my Star Wars.
I was sort of worried with her character because she could have been the sort of stereotypical, like, quote-unquote, like, punk rock bad girl character, you know, where, like, okay,
she is a little bit.
A little bit, but not like they would have given her some sort of, like, space skateboard, like, hoverboard thing, to add it.
I just imagine Marty McFly from Back to the Future, but with Sabine.
And like, those lame TV, like punk rock hairstyles or something. They would have given her a mohawk or something, but they didn't. She was just a character who was an artist. And you see her art reflected in her like clothing style and her, in her room and stuff like that. But they didn't like overdo it, which they usually do with artist characters being like super quirky. Or
actually something very minor I noticed watching the first one with Kanan and Hera, when you're in the cockpit with Hera, you can actually tell which seat is Sabine's because it has like patchwork and stuff on it.
And it has like got some more color to it and stuff.
That's such a minor thing, but like that's Sabine's chair.
And they were also sort of setting her up as maybe a love interest for Ezra, and I'm glad that really didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, because I'm a very firm believer that, men and women and young men and women can be friends without falling in love, because it's so overdone. Like, I actually kind of like them having
Like, once you get going, her character and Ezra's character probably wouldn't have been a very great pair anyway, but like Ezra just sort of is.
I just heard so many fangirls scream at you.
Well, that's fine, but but Ezra is also kind of in his Patrick Delmore voice phase of like a girl. Oh, I'm on a ship with a girl in space.
Yeah,
And the other girl's obviously with that other guy, so hi.
I definitely like see. I'm gonna just say this from the get-go now. Like, I've always seen Ezra and Sabine more as a brother and sister relationship, but I can also definitely see where shippers ship them, because there's
Well,
love
shippers
there.
will ship.
Yeah, and the thing is like they love each other. Ezra and Sabine clearly love each other. It's just interpreting is that sibling love or romantic love, and that's where it's up the open. And I've always seen them like a sibling love, but I can but like. You know, love is love. It's just love has so many different forms. Like, it could go a di million different ways, and all of it's okay. But yeah, that's all I have for Sabine's.
All right, are you ready for my tie for my favorite?
Sorry, I was like in the middle of talking, and I was like, I feel my nose running. This is gross. And now it's gonna be even grosser because you guys get to hear me blow my nose. Here we go. Yep. By the way, if this is your first time listening, we are the quote unquote classiest podcast in the galaxy
Amen.
because we don't shy away from adult topics and sneezes and burps and
Bodily
peeing.
functions on mic. Yeah,
Yeah, we don't
it's all
pee on
good.
the show, but we do have a very catchy pee song when we have to pee.
Once I get my Bluetooth lavalier mic, maybe we will.
No. So, if you want to hear the height of our classiness, go back to our Clone Wars episode, Grievous Intrigued, where we talk about pagan parties and pudding wrestling and penis piercings. Welcome to Jay Guys and Jedi!
And
Yay!
yeah, and it's and that's the nice description of it.
Yeah, that is the height of our classiness. I think that's where we also all found out that I have a thing for weathermen. Yeah, that was that episode. I have a thing for weathermen, apparently.
Like
So.
actual weathermen and not weathermen as in the radical group from the 60s.
Right, like actual people, like
That do the
on weather
weather,
channels.
yeah.
But they stand in the rain and they
Ooh.
get wet and there's clothes stick to them. Like, weather people are awesome. The men and the women all stand in the rain and they get wet and it's great.
More Willard Scott than Jerry Rubin or Abbie Hoffman.
No, more like my bets and like and stuff. Like, weather people are awesome. They stand in the wet rain. Anyway, ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Prequel 3, Entanglement. We start off with Zeb calling into Kanan that he is at the rendezvous point for a mission. Only Zeb must not be there because Kanan's at the rendezvous point. But Zeb spots a bunch of stormtroopers pestering a fruit seller in the alley, and they kick over all the fruit, and the seller that oh they kick over the fruit seller's droid, and the seller, who doesn't seem to know basic, offers the troopers some money. And the troopers are like, "Oh ho, look at this! He is bribing us. You're under arrest." But Zeb steps in and knocks them both out. Zeb is spotted by more troopers and runs down an alley right into the TIE fighter pilot Valen Rudor. Immediately, Zeb punches Rudor and Spider Monkey jumps on top of the TIE fighter, just to turn around and jump on some more stormtroopers and they fight. And Zeb pulls out his bow rifle to continue the brawl. The entire time during all this, Kanan's on the comm going, "Zeb, Space Dad is telling you to stop fighting stormtroopers. You are Space Uncle. You must set an example." Ugh. Fine, just don't embarrass the troopers and don't make them look too pathetic, okay? And Pilot Rudar grabs a blaster and requests reinforcements. Zeb hops back on the TIE fighter and grabs Rudor with his Lasat feet and throws him to the ground. Drawing the Imperial firepower, Zeb spots a leak on the TIE fighter. Because it's leaking gas, I forgot to mention that. He hurries away just as the stormtroopers shoot the gas leak and make the TIE fighter explode. And all the Imperials are knocked out, and Zeb struts out of the smoke like a champ. And the fruit seller offers him money, but Zeb waves it off, accepting a piece of fruit. Kanan calls in that he'll follow the smoke and come pick up Zeb. And Zeb sees more stormtroopers rushing in, draws his bow rifle, and is happy to wait for Kanan while beating up on some more stormtroopers. The end.
Yeah, this is tied for my favorite one just on the strength of Zeb's character.
What's the other one that?
The other one is the next one.
Okay.
This one and Property Ezra Bridger are my favorite for two favorites for different reasons. But this one is just like Zeb is a great character, and it's great to see him in action, like that he could climb like Spider-Man, like along the you know, edges of a TIE fighter to avoid people and just generally runs circles around them. There's more like Ralph, this one definitely has a lot of Ralph McQuarrie, and it's a big tribute to Indiana Jones, the first Indiana Jones movie. It's got music flat out from the song The Basket Chase from Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Indy's chasing some people who have Marion in a basket through a very similar sort of marketplace series of alleyways. And in the same movie, Indy blows up a flying wing German aircraft that's leaking gas. There's a whole, you know, leaking gas, running away from it just in time before it explodes. So it's a very Raiders of the Lost Ark sort of themed episode. So I loved it. It was just fun. It's fun to see him just chucking stormtroopers around.
Yeah, I love Zeb. Like, I would probably say my favorite characters of Rebels in any order are Hera, Kanan, Zeb, and Callus. And I love them all four for absolutely different reasons. And I actually loved Callus before he, like, turned good, because I just loved him as a bad guy.
I'm surprised they didn't have Callus as one of these. I'm surprised they didn't do a fifth one for Callus. That would have sort of balanced it out, you know?
You know, fun fact, early designs, and you can still find them floating around online, Callus was supposed to be a Chiss like Thrawn, and they scrapped it.
Okay.
Yeah, Callus was supposed to be a Chiss. I'm actually really glad they did that, though.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was like, oh, that would have been just a completely different story, too. And I like to think of those possibilities. But yeah, like, I love Zeb. Like, Zeb is one of my favorite characters. Actually, I talked about it a little bit last week in a tiny tangent, but, like, one of my biggest pet peeves of Rebels in Season 3 and Season 4 is how much they lose focus on Zeb. Like, he just doesn't have the strength of stories that he had in the first two seasons. And that was just a big upset for me, because I love Zeb. He's, like, the tough muscle guy, but he has, like, the heart of gold, and, like, he cares a hell of a lot for these people.
He's a talking Chewbacca. And he has the original design of Chewbacca, so...
Yeah, and it's something as simple as, like, when he's walking out of the smoke and the fruit seller tries to pay him for saving him, and he waves it off and he just takes a piece of fruit instead of taking his money, because he knows this man needs the money. And that's such a very, like, visual thing to show that, like, yeah, Zeb's this big, tough, muscly guy, but he's also really sweet and he's very kind. And it was a very visual moment of showing, like, what kind of character he was. Okay, my next note. I love Zeb's design, too. Like, for one, he's purple. Like, the big muscle guy is purple of all colors. And he's, like, a soft purple, too. And
it's
he's
a weird,
fuzzy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that's not a very common color for, like, big, muscly, tough guys. Purple! Fuck yeah! And so I love that color choice for him. And I love that, like, his feet are, like, dexterous, and, like, they're, like, extra hands, and he can climb, and he's, like, a big cat monkey man, and I love him. I love Zeb. He's so great. And Steve Bloom does so good with his voice. Like, it's so rough and gravelly, but it's, like, there's so much life in his voice. Like, Steve Bloom just does such a great job voicing Zeb.
Oh, it's got a little Australian in it, too, which is sort of reminiscent of the clones, but it's different from the clones. It's more Crocodile Dundee than the clones.
Yeah, I should note that I'm drinking out of my Rebels cup tonight.
Nice.
I know, I got it for 99 cents, and what I like about it is I got it very early on during the hashtag Where's Hera, and I was like, oh my god, it's a cup that has Hera and Sabine on it, but it has all six of the Spectres, and it has the Grand Inquisitor on it. Got this shit at Kroger for 99 cents, so I'm
nice.
Drinking out of my Rebels cup tonight.
Wow.
And also, I just wanted to say, my favorite line of all this is Kanan going, Zeb, are you embarrassing the Imperials again? And he's like, honestly, Kanan, it's just easy. But I guess that brings up a really good question. I'll talk about it later. I actually have that note later, so I'll come back to that note. Do I have that note? Did I put that in my sixth state? Okay, no. Yeah, I did. I'll come back to that note later. So, but that's all I have for Zeb. I love him. I think this is the best to, like, really capture, like, the character 100%.
All right. This next one's my second favorite. Not second favorite. It's tied for favorite.
Yeah. So, prequel four?
Prequel four.
All right. I bring you Property of Ezra Bridger. Ezra is walking through the plains of the Fall near his home in an abandoned communications tower. He's whistling to himself when he stops and hears ships fighting in the distance. Suddenly, the ghost and a TIE fighter burst out of the clouds in a dogfight. He watches as the ghost shoots down the TIE, which crashes nearby. Ezra sprints off towards the downed ship. Ezra knocks on the door of the ship to see if the person is alive. And TIE fighter Rooter, from the last short that we just now talked about, shouts back, "Don't touch my ship, you bitch!" And Ezra's like, "Oh, well, I was going to be helpful, but you called me a bitch, so here we go!" And as the Blueberry, which Ezra's nickname on the internet is the Blueberry, and that's like a for real nickname, and I don't remember if it was the official Star Wars account or if it was Pablo Hidalgo, but one of them actually used Blueberry to talk as Ezra's nickname, so like it's an official nickname, so from here on out when I say the Blueberry, I'm talking about
Ezra. Why is it the Blueberry?
It started as a fandom thing, like, so, like, people were like, "Oh, our cute little Blueberry!" Okay. And actually, and then in season two, when he was dabbling with the Sith Holocron, people started calling him the Blackberry.
Oh my god.
It's a fandom thing, but it caught the eye of, it was either Pablo or Star Wars official account, and they actually tweeted out calling Ezra a Blueberry. So, he's the Blueberry. So, the Blueberry climbs up on the smoking ship and pops open the top to let the smoke out. Rooter is being an asshole, and he's being rude. So the Blueberry is like, "All right, let's go and do Aladdin mode, and I'm just going to rob you." And Ezra starts elaborately, quote-unquote, trying to help Rooter out of the ship. But Ezra starts swiping bits and pieces from his dashboard to sell in the black market. And he swipes Rooter's helmet last, because Ezra collects Imperial Stormtrooper helmets, and he leaps out of the ship. And Rooter is pissed off and takes aim at him. Ezra very suddenly stops with a distant look in his eye, and you hear the sound of like woo, 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 in the background, and then he suddenly sprints out of the way as soon as Rudor takes the shot. And Ezra has his slingshot and shoots a ball high up in the air so it lands inside the TIE fighter and stuns Rudor. Picking up the helmet, Ezra pops it on his head, salutes the TIE fighter pilot, and marches home with his brand new helmet. The end.
Yeah, I like this one a lot.
I figured you would. This is the most Star Wars-y one.
It's funny, it's like, since we've watched the whole series, it's like, oh my god, he's just a kid, because he has some growth spurts during this run of the show.
Yeah, he's definitely taller in the final season.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm used to him being, you know, not the kid version. And has a Star Wars line in it. It has "You'll be sorry, you'll be dead."
Mm-hmm.
And I like that they did the, you know, they made sure, and that was all you really get to, like, give you the idea that Ezra has, you know, is strong with the Force. Well, they play the music too, but
yeah.
You know, they give you that moment where he senses the future, or, you know, what's gonna happen, and then avoids it. And yeah, it's just very well. The way it flows, it's very well done, and I like how all of these just show all these characters as being very confident and apt at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I really liked it.
That's actually what I remember when I first watched them for the first time. This was actually my least favorite.
Oh.
But going back and looking at it again, this is up there for me. I think it's actually one of the better, well done ones. And it's just like little things. Like, I think it's fun that Ezra is whistling the show's theme song in the beginning. It's a very meta moment. He's just whistling like dun 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 dun, like he's just whistling it. I like that. And to me, like, this is the most Star Warsy of all the shorts.
I was
like,
gonna
you have...
use that phrase, but then I saw that you were using it down here, so I was like gonna let you use it first. But yes, it is. Definitely.
Like, you have that one shot of, like, Ezra on the ground watching the battle, like, the sky battle
yeah.
in the distance. And you know what it actually reminded me of? Now that I've seen the Tartakovsky Clone Wars, it reminded me of that scene where the little boy is watching the battle that Mace Windu is in.
Well, those are both references to a cut scene from the original Star Wars of Luke watching the blockade runner getting overtaken by the Star Destroyer from the ground. And Luke even had a hat on in that cutscene, very much like the little kid in the Tartakovsky one. So these are both sort of, those are both sort of just sort of like little references to Luke in that cutscene. And it makes, it's has a lot more resonance in this, because this is a character, so they're basically sort of presenting him very much like that. That would, I think that first scene of Luke looking up at the starfighters would have been the first shot of Luke Skywalker in Star Wars if it had remained in.
Yeah.
And so they're tying, you know, they're tying the, him into, you know, they're comparing him to Luke Skywalker, which is a fair comparison.
Yeah. And I also like in the scene how they tease that Ezra's with the Force. It's like not very blatant. He's not lifting rocks or anything. He's just running and he stops. And he gets a very distant look in his eyes for half a second. And then he dashes off to the side to miss the blast. And it's just enough for you to go, oh, this kid is Force sensitive.
Yeah, and he might not even know it. He might not even know it. They don't show it as something that it's, you know, something he understands or is using. It seemed more like something that was surprising to him. It was well done.
Yeah. And it actually, my other note is, it actually reminds me a lot of how Rey is presented in both the new movies and in the comics. They do this in Forces of Destiny in the Star Wars Adventures comics with her, like before she's been found by everybody when she's still just a scavenger. And Rey is constantly saying, I'm just lucky. Like, I'm just always lucky. And it's her not realizing that she's using the Force. And I like that we're seeing this with Ezra, because there are no Jedi. There's no one to guide them. So they're just presented as being kind of like lucky people. And I like that there's that through line from like Ezra to Rey, and they're just presented in that way. Because they don't know what they have. They just, you know, they just have this kind of like quote unquote lucky sixth sense to keep them alive. So I like how it's presented, and how it also just kind of ties into how Rey is presented in Forces of Destiny and the Star Wars Adventures comics before she's found.
Yeah, this is all Disney trying to set up dealing with this. This is all going to have repercussions, sort of, not repercussions, but reflections up into like The Last Jedi, you know, mm-hmm. where it's like they're trying to disengage the Force from like family lines and into, you know, there's just people out there who have more Force sensitivity.
Yeah.
They're normalizing that idea.
And my last note for this is, it was just kind of funny, like, cause I was thinking back to when we were doing our canon dives just the last several weeks. And I started thinking back to the Darth Vader comic that we covered a few weeks ago. And part of what happened in that one is Jocasta Nu had built her school, her hidden school, and all she needed was the holocron with all the list of babies that had been born recently that were Force sensitive. Well, we find out later that Ezra was born right before that, on the day that the Empire was formed. And so he could have possibly been on that list that Jocasta Nu recovered, but Vader destroys the list. And that moment actually probably saved Ezra's life from, like, being hunted by Inquisitors or becoming Inquisitors. And I just was like, wow, that's a cool moment I never thought of before. That, I mean, I don't know how holocrons work. I don't know if, like, the moment the baby pops out that the Force just records it on the holocron, or if the Jedi do it. Like, I don't know how that works. But there's a chance that Ezra could have been on that list, and Vader destroying it probably saved his life. Which is kind of funny, because then Ezra's a thorn in Vader's side later.
Right.
But I just thought that was a little cool moment that I never really thought about before, that moment in the comic probably saved Ezra to be in this point today. I just like all the canon being connected. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, they do like it well.
Yeah. But that's my last one about this one. I just had a couple of general questions, though you kind of already answered it. What was your favorite of all the shorts?
The last two, Ezra's and Zeb's were my favorite. They were the most with Kanan and Hera's coming in third. But Ezra's was the most Star Warsy, and Zeb's was just the most Zeb Bush. Zeb's was the most entertaining of the lot, you know, just based on his character. It was just a fun one to watch.
You know, I like them all for different reasons. Like, if I had to pick a favorite, it would probably be a toss-up between Zeb and Ezra's, because, but I like all four of them, but I like all four of them for very different reasons. I think they do a really good job of capturing the characters. But my other question is, do you think that they're too kiddie?
No, not really.
That is a constant complaint in the current animation shows.
I kind of had that complaint the first time through.
Uh-huh.
And now, having watched this in the first episode, I'm noticing it's not as kiddie, and maybe it's because I know what's coming.
Yeah.
And I know, I'll get into this more next week, but, you know, in the following weeks, in the first few weeks of the show, I was like, oh, they're just sort of, and like the ghost itself looks a little bit like a smaller version of the Millennium Falcon. And I'm like, they've just sort of built like this mini version of Star Wars, you know, of the original Star Wars characters. Where you have a Millennium Falcon, a stand-in for Tatooine, sort of a stand-in for Luke, and a stand-in for Han and Obi-Wan together, a stand-in for R2, a stand-in for Chewie, and they're all a group, and they all foil the Empire. And you know, it was going to follow that format for a while. And it also did seem kiddie in comparison to Clone Wars, but now the second time around, it's not feeling as much kiddie, probably because I'm familiar with the characters and know them as more nuanced characters too now than I did just seeing these shorts. But on second viewing, it's not quite as kiddie. It's still pretty kiddie. It's fun, you know, but I've been formulating a theory. You know how people talk about being like, are you a true Star Wars fan or not, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, I think being like, I'm a Star Wars fan since the beginning, but like, I think for me to be a true Star Wars fan, the meaning of a true Star Wars fan is somebody about 8 to 10 years old. And if the Star Wars is appealing to someone who's 8 to 10 years old, then so basically, if I'm watching Star Wars, I don't have to be completely mentally 8 or 10 years old, but if I have, you know, to be a real Star Wars fan, you got to sort of get into that mode, you know, you got to enjoy it like a little kid would enjoy it and enjoy it on those terms. And this certainly was working within that.
Newsflash, I would say most adult Star Wars fans, when did you fall in love with Star Wars? When you were a child.
Right.
When you were a child. You know, for me, the first time I watched through, I agree. The first time I saw these, I thought they were really kiddie too. But now, like, I kind of look back on them with several points. I've, over time, since Rebels have started, has taken on more of a role of, you know, I like to accept them for what they are, because it's a kid's show. It's a kid's show on Disney XD. Of course it's going to be a little childish. And I always use the comparison of my nephew. My nephew loves Star Wars. He's 7. And I constantly do this for Resistance, because a lot of the jokes in Resistance fall flat for me. But then I stop and I go, would my 8-year-old nephew like this joke? And most of the time the answer is yes, he would love those jokes. Or we talk about Dario's kid. When we did our Clone Wars roundtable, we were talking about how you and I hated the droid arc in Clone Wars with, like, Whack and Gaskon and R2.
And it was flat out his favorite.
But Dario's kid loved. Yeah. That's his favorite arc, because it's made for him. So, like, that's kind of the first step that, like, you know, first and foremost, I always have to keep in mind that this is a show specifically targeting the demographic of children. Number two, I think that these shorts do exactly what they need to do in 3 minutes. They're not trying to do some deep arc with, like, Darth Maul that's been growing for two seasons.
Or
Ahsoka versus Vader. This is a 3-minute short presenting who the characters are, and it does that.
Yeah, it's what? A little character sketch. You don't need it to watch the first episode, but it just gives you a little hint of what to expect.
Yeah. And then finally, like, this is what we were talking about when we covered the novel Thrawn a few weeks ago. Now going back and watching this, having read Thrawn and understanding the history of Lothal and how Lothal got to this point, and knowing that Lothal is a backwater planet that the Empire didn't care about. It's not on any major hyperspace routes. It's a very hard-ass planet to get to, and it's not important to the Empire. And we know from the Thrawn novel that they just sent the worst Imperials there because they didn't give a shit about Lothal. And so looking at it in that context, I understand of these are the lowest, worst Imperials because this planet wasn't important at this time. And that makes me, and so I understand this better of course they're being beaten up by teenagers. These are like the lowest, worst people there because I've read this other canon piece, which is the reason why we covered these novels in the canon dive. So I really appreciate it a lot more, and I enjoy these a lot more for what they are now.
I agree.
And
they've whetted my appetite.
Huh?
They've whetted my appetite.
Yeah, and the last point I have about this actually has nothing to do with these shorts. It has to do with Resistance. After watching these, I kept just thinking to myself, man, I wish we had prequel shorts for Resistance. I wish we got this treatment with Resistance, because I feel like Resistance did not get the press and the bells and the whistles that Rebels got. And on it, like when I remember when Rebels first started, even though I wasn't watching it, I was very much aware that it was on because my Star Wars Twitter would be blowing up. Now when I watch Resistance, like, my Star Wars Twitter barely makes a dent. Like, I barely see anything about Resistance still to this day. And, like, I think if we had gotten prequel shorts, like, they did a good job, like, setting up, like, these, like, preview things, like, these are the ace pilots and stuff like that. But they weren't character shorts like these. Like, I wish we got an episode about Tam and Niku, and another one about Yeager and Bucket, and one about the ace pilots, and then a fourth one about Kaz flying in the New Republic. And I thought that would have been a really good way to introduce these characters, just like they did in Rebels, because I think this was a very successful thing they did for Rebels, that they did not do it for Resistance. And I think that was a huge missed opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, what they're doing with Resistance is weird. Like, the promotion is very different. I actually miss Rebels Recon. Rebels Recon was a thing that came out after every Rebels episode, and it was like a 10 to 15 minute short that was like behind the scenes with the actors and like the creators and stuff like that. And they were like 10 to 15 minutes long of just nothing but like discussing the episodes and the characters. And now for Resistance, they're like 30 seconds.
Well,
it's Bucket's List and Resistance Rewind, and they're like 30 seconds each. And I'm like, why are we not like really diving into this like we did for Rebels?
Maybe there's a lot of energy being there. There's a TV show, the live action shows coming out, and Clone Wars. So there might be. It just might be a matter of resources, you know.
And I get that, because Lord knows I'm so excited for The Mandalorian, and I'm so excited for the Cassian show. Oh my god. Go back to episode 101 to hear me fangirl for two and a half hours.
Well, there's the Cassian show, and there's that Mandalorian, the Mandalorian show, too. So.
That's what I just said. I said I was excited for Mandalorian and Cassian.
Yeah, and Clone Wars. So there's like there's four Star Wars TV shows being.
And then like episode 9 is coming, right. And they have like.
There's a trailer coming for episode 9 next week, I think they just announced.
Oh.
So yeah, so they're busy.
And I understand that, but like. But towards the end of Rebels, even when they were doing like all the different movies like Solo and episode 8 and all the stuff. Like, they still had time for Rebels Recon. I just guess it's just frustrating that Resistance isn't getting the same treatment as Rebels.
I imagine Dave Filoni might just be a really busy guy. Yeah. They all might be real busy guys, actually.
But even then, it was Andy Gutierrez that did the Rebels Recon. It wasn't Dave Filoni. Like, he would be on the episodes and stuff like that, but it wasn't just Dave. It was, like, Pablo and the voice actors, like, Vanessa Marshall and Taylor and like, Freddie Prinze Jr. and everything. Like, so I just, it just, it's very, after seeing these, it's very frustrating that Resistance didn't get the same treatment as Rebels. Because I feel like Resistance would be having a very different reaction for people if it got the same kind of publicity and promotion and had these shorts just like Rebels did. I feel like it would be in a very different place. But, well, that's all I have for this. So, final thoughts on the shorts?
I like them.
I didn't rate them because it's not like it's an episode.
Yeah, neither did I.
Okay, good. Usually this is the section where we numerically like rate the episode. We didn't do it this time. So,
for what they are, yeah. I'd give them like a 9. They were very good.
I'd probably give them like an 8 or a 9 too. Probably they would vary. Like Ezra and Zeb would be like a 9. Sabine would probably be like a 7, and Kanan and Hera would be like an 8.
Yeah.
That's probably how they would roughly fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the shorts. I think they do everything that they exactly need to do. And they give just enough about the characters, and they tease the conflict of the show. I guess if I had any criticisms, I would have liked to see a little bit more of LaFall, just in general. But even then, like, it's not needed. Because we get the idea that this is kind of like a rural planet, and it's kind of backwatery from what we've seen. But if I had any criticism, I would like to see like a touch more of LaFall and Lees, but I mean, it's not needed because we're about to spend four seasons there. So, well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show on iTunes, it helps people find the show. So if you like us, give us a shout out there. And this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for all of our episodes for the Canon Dives, except for A New Dawn, because at the time of this recording, we haven't done A New Dawn yet. That's actually coming out tomorrow at the time of the show's recording.
Oh, that's
so
right.
We'll have the feedback for A New Dawn next week. So take it away, Chris.
Okay.
And I have it broken down by episodes in the bold.
Okay, so these ones are for the Ahsoka novel. The first one's from Paul C. Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
He says, thanks for the heads up, Hope. I stopped after you said there would be spoilers for the Ahsoka and Thrawn novel because I might try to read both of these at some point. Is that Gene doing the new intro? The podcast lives on. Oh, yeah. And then Gene, of course, answered by saying, of course it's me doing the new intro. There has to be continuity between shows. Winky face. And then Gene said, apparently I managed to give Chris a Gene voice to add to his repertoire. Smiley face.
Which is what he's doing right now.
Yes, you did, Gene. And I'm being all meta about it. All right, so then we got one from Pat Delmore saying, new intro? Sorry I waited. And then he's like, sorry I admitted to waiting, guys. It's all right, man.
We love you.
It's all right. Just stop admitting your weakness on Facebook. They're all sharks out there, Patrick. If they know you're weak, they'll come. They smell just the slightest molecule of blood on the internet. Anyway, okay, so for the Thrawn episode, we've got Gene back. Oh, good. I love doing Gene's new voice. It's a new voice for me. For our Thrawn episode, Gene said, this was our mega, like, 3-hour and 20-minute-long episode.
Did I lost my voice?
Yeah, no doubt. Gene says, I actually laughed out loud at the Uron High School host club reference. Hope, nice one. Smiley face. And Hope said, ha, thanks, Gene. Such a great show.
It really is. Uron High School host club is an amazing anime. Like, people are usually so critical of anime.
Thrawn is my husband? Like, we're married?
Well, Oran is one of those shows that, like, people are so critical of anime, but I've never heard anyone ever say anything bad about Oran High School Host Club, because it is a perfect show. Oh, my God.
Like, Thrawn is my husband, but he's in Canada, so you wouldn't, like, know him?
You wouldn't know him, but, like, we're totally space married. He is amazing. I actually...
There's actually a crazy woman I used to follow on Facebook who was in Canada, and she believed that she was space married to, what the hell is the actor's name who plays Data in Star Trek The Next Generation? Brett Spiner. And she would tell stories of her marriage to Brett Spiner, who, of course, had never met her before in his life.
I actually, I didn't put it in here in our feedback, but I was talking with our listener Aaron Henley on Twitter, and I forgot how we got to the point, but we were talking about Thrawn, and at some point I was discussing with him, and I think I freaked him out about my theory about when Thrawn is aroused, his dick is purple because he's blue and his blood
is
red.
I'm sure you did, yeah.
And Aaron was like, "Okay, well I'm tapping out."
All right, enough conversation for now, Hope. Yep, that's what happens when people I am Hope or me.
Well, if people go back and listen to our fan fiction episode from a couple months ago, we had my friend Megan on, and we were discussing fan fiction and stuff like that. Megan and I have actually had really detailed conversations about what color Thrawn's blood is, because that would actually dictate what color his erection is. So if he has green blood, it would be teal.
Science.
And we've actually had really in-depth conversations about Thrawn's erection color.
You guys are regular dick scientists.
We are. But it's true. Depending on his blood color, it would change the color of his dick.
Yeah,
it's a very important thing.
It's all scientific. I know. All right.
This is what me and my best friend do when we're bored. We debate fantasy characters' dick colors.
Yeah, well, it's not far off from what the guys do when they're having their conversations. It might actually be exactly the same, actually. Okay. Okay, for the Darth Vader comic episode, we had one from Paul C. Kelly. And he says, "Seems like with all these Inquisitors, Palpatine is really breaking the rule of two established by Bane. In Clone Wars, Dooku seemed to do it with intent to overthrow Palpatine. Oh, yeah. In the book Darth Plagueis, he does run into other Sith attacking him that were secretly trained by his master. Keep him on his toes."
I don't quite agree with this. And the reason is that there's a couple times in the Darth Vader comic where Palpatine looks at Vader and he's like, "I want you to do this thing. Don't tell the Inquisitors. They're not Sith."
Right. Well, that's what I said. Darth Vader has been basically ordained a Sith. You know, Rise, he's been given his new name and stuff. And, you know, he's officially the Sith, you know. And Dooku is gone before that happens. So, no, I think he's pretty much holding out. You can have other dark force-using people, and you want to, because, if you have a law of two, if something happens to the one, you have to have a number two on deck, and probably both the master and the apprentice would probably both have several number twos on deck just in case, because as Sith, they should be all plotting against everybody else.
I mean, look at Vader. He wanted to train Luke to be his next.
Right.
So, I don't think it's breaking the rule of two, because he was constantly keeping Sith knowledge away from the Inquisitors, but I think of them more like the dark side, SS police of Palpatine and Vader.
Yeah. They're still Cub Scouts.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're the Eagle Scouts.
Right.
No, they're the troop leaders. I know, I just imagine Papa Palpatine and Vader taking all the Inquisitors camping. "All right, children, put your marshmallows on the stick. Don't burn them.
We're going to do some team-building exercises."
Trust falls. And then he just shocks them with lightning. He was like, "You shouldn't have trusted me."
"There's no such thing as a team, you idiots."
"You're a team, but not. Feel free to kill each other if given the chance, but not yet. Don't." "I need you for, one mission. Bye." Yep, that's exactly. Meanwhile, the Grand Inquisitor is like, "I just want to read books."
"I'll be in my bunk."
"Don't talk to me, God." Anyway, so this is usually the part of the show where we review candy from all over the world, because our wonderful friend Dario is a flight attendant, and he sends us candy to review from all over the world. We don't have any candy yet, but I did just eat some very lovely chocolate peppermint bark. So that was delicious.
Oh, nice.
I know. It's that time of year where it's like, yes, give me all the chocolate peppermint flavors. Because I'm only in, like, that mood to eat, like, peppermint and chocolate during Christmas time.
Yeah, I don't...
So I guess I did. It was the Ghirardelli chocolate square peppermint bar.
Yum. I haven't had any candy today.
It was quite delicious.
No candy today. I had a couple Oreos, and that's about it.
So, yeah, this is usually where we review candy from all over the world. We don't have candy right now.
I know Dario has candy for us in the freezer there, but we've just slacked off and neglected to give him a, like, 2 weeks notice to get it here.
So yeah,
the rebels just sort of caught up with us, you know, out of nowhere.
Well, we were expecting also to do the original trilogy commentaries before we realized that we could start Rebels.
Yeah, right, we thought we had almost another month to get some candy, but don't worry, there'll be candy here soon.
You guys will eat any of it.
Nope, you'll hear about it, though. You'll hear its wrappers crinkling and the crunching as we eat it.
I still love that. Like, that's, like, the number one thing that people complain about in podcasts is when people eat and we're just like, review all the candy!
It's a featured part of every episode.
Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our podcast website. That's where we post all our podcasts. You can go there and sign up for our feeds, and you can also do that through iTunes. We are also on Facebook. There's a Two True Freaks page on Facebook where we basically just release all the episodes, and you can talk about the episodes on their threads. And if you want to talk about anything else besides specific episodes, we have the Two True Freaks Cantina that you can also join and just shoot the shit. And we also have, of course, I guess you have to have a Twitter page, the evil and vile wretched hive of scum and villainy that is Twitter. Not that Facebook isn't a cesspool of fun.
It's been fun today, because today is December 17th and Tumblr just went to hell. So
Tumblr just went to hell.
Yeah, this has been fun to watch some of my favorite artists suddenly disappear from the internet because of censorship bullshit.
Tumbling into hell, yeah. From starting out on one of the least censored places on the internet to what it is today. But that's a whole other episode.
Oh, like, four of my favorite Star Wars artists have been taken off. And, like, I've been watching them on Twitter, and they're like, the fuck did all of our shit go? Bullshit.
I used to have a J Guys and Jedi feed on... Or Two True Freaks feed that I used to put J Guys and Jedi's episode up on Tumblr until it just started going downhill. But yeah, it's tumbling to hell.
Yeah, it's that day. But it's day zero of new Tumblr.
But we have a Twitter. We have a Twitter feed run by the incomparable Gene, the podcasting machine.
You know what? It's a brand new show, so we should do this in classic mode.
Gene. Oh, well. Not perfect, but classic. Yeah. That's pretty much all I got for where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter, personal Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I also have my website, geekygirlexperience.com, where I'm still sitting on three resistant blogs I haven't had a chance to write because I've been working a lot. What?
Come on, Hope.
Hey, God. It's Christmas time and I've been working a lot. And I had to finish Christmas cards. And I cross-stitched to a grievous as opposed to writing blogs.
Whatever. Whatever, Mullinax.
So yeah, you can find my blog at geekygirlexperience.com. Feel free to buy me a coffee, because that's nice. I'm also a fan fiction writer on Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short. My main story is called Forces of Gravity, which is a Thrawn fan fiction. And I also beta read Valkyrie Strike by my friend Megan on AO3 as well, so you can find our work there.
It almost sounded like you said that you Vader read. I like that better, almost.
This is a dangling participle.
She gasps and wheezes through the whole thing.
Yes,
floating
exactly
in a back to tank.
But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Well, come back next week and for really, really, really real, we're going to start Rebels with the actual episode one. And just for a treat, it's going to be a double-sized episode too.
Yeah, which has been so funny just because I do want to say thank you to John, who helped us get all the Rebels episode, who worked really, really hard to make sure that we had Rebels in time to do this. So thank you, John.
Yes,
like,
it was
it's
a
super
big
sweet
help.
Of you.
I'm having computer trouble, so I can't download stuff like I used to.
Yeah, and they're not on the Disney app. Like, the early seasons are not on the Disney app anymore, so we had to be a little creative finding Rebels this time. And so just a big thank you to John for helping us out and getting it done so quickly and pretty much spending a weekend getting Rebels in line for us. So thank you, John. But next week is Sparks of Rebellion, I think. Is it Sparks of Rebellion?
I believe that is.
Sparks of Rebellion, will you believe, of next week. Okay, I'm just going to awkwardly just walk away now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Sock it to me?